Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to In the Studio with Linus here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. I'm so glad you're joining me today. Well, you know, every Wednesday is Tuesday. I'm sorry. Let me say that right quick. We are now on Tuesday night at 6 p.m. I used to come on Wednesday. Instead, on Wednesday tomorrow night at 6 p.m., we will be doing psychic readings for 1 hour. How about that? We always do it on Sundays, but we're going to be doing it 2 days during the week now, Sunday and Wednesday. So Tuesday is now In the Studio with Linus. As usual, we'll be discussing entertainment, news, hot topics, sports, news of the weird. Always something to laugh about and learn, of course. You can call in and join the show with your comments or opinions. All are welcome. Just remember to keep it respectable. The chat room is open. That phone number is area code 646-727-2914. Now, in the ad, I stated that we would be talking about Hillary's health, Roger Ailes, the AFC and NFC winners and losers, and a little bit of news of the weird. So I haven't got to Hillary, but I'll tell you what, let's start this off on the good foot, and this is going to be about Fox News, about the host, another charge against Roger Ailes. Former Fox News host Andrea Tartaros sues network. It operates, she said, like a sex-fueled Playboy mansion-like cult, and I can believe that. Okay, let me play you a little clip, and then we'll go right into the story. Hold on.
Filed a sexual harassment lawsuit against Fox News. Former host Andrea Tartaros filed a suit on Monday in New York, claiming that executives at Fox retaliated against her for complaints about inappropriate behavior. Not only does she claim that she received unwanted sexual advances from former president of Fox News Roger Ailes and host Bill O'Reilly, she says that she was forbidden to wear pants on air because Ailes wanted to see her legs. The suit also goes on to claim that Tartaros was taken off the air because of those complaints. Fox News also filed a lawsuit against Tartaros earlier this year, claiming breach of contract. Tartaros is seeking $49 million in punitive damage for lost income, mental anguish, and attorney fees.
Okay. Uh-oh. Sorry about that. Okay. We are back. So, let's go a little bit deeper into this. The lawsuit is the latest of the former outnumbered co-host's legal entanglements with Fox News earlier this year. Fox claimed that she had breached her contract by writing a book without getting network approval. Now, according to court documents obtained by People magazine, Tartaros 37, claims that she received unwanted sexual advances from both Roger Ailes, 76, and Bill O'Reilly, who is 66 years old. I can't stand either one of them, but I sure can't stand Bill O'Reilly. And alleges that she was taken off the air as retaliation for lodging the complaints. I can believe that. I don't think she's lying. Fox News masquerades as a defender of traditional family values. Miss me with that shit. But behind the scenes, it operates like a sex-fueled Playboy mansion-like cult. Steeped. Do you hear me? Steeped in intimidation, indecency, and misogyny. This is what Tataros alleges in her suit, okay? Now, Ailes, the network founding chairman, I don't know if y'all have seen it, and former CEO, I don't know if you've seen the picture of him, but he looks like a sneaky bastard. And, yeah, he looks like he did it. Resigned last month. His exit came 2 weeks after former Fox News host Gretchen Carlson filed suit against Roger Ailes, claiming sexual harassment and retaliation. I'm telling you, y'all, he looks like somebody that knows the right people, but would just do anything he wants to do because of the people that he knows or he thought he knew. Tataro's suit alleges she was reportedly told by Fox executives that she could not wear pants on air because Roger wants to see your legs. It also claims that Ailes called her into his office in August 2 years ago and asked if she was planning to marry and have children. Ain't that something? That's a lot of damn nerve, Roger. Ailes then started complaining about marriage in general and often made off-color jokes about being married. Well, honey, your wife knows now. The lawsuit states charging Ailes asked Tantoros to turn around so I can get a good look at you. But that Tantoros refused. Soon after, Tantoros was moved from the 5 to Outnumbered, a reportedly lower-rated show that aired at midday. The lawsuit claims Tantoros continually to rebuff Ailes and alleges she began to encounter hostility from Fox's news publicity department. Ain't that a bitch? The suit also alleges Tantoros was the subject of humiliating posts by pseudonymous, you know that, they ain't going to tell their name, accounts on Twitter known as Sock Puppets that she really claims were instigated by the Fox News publicity department. You know what Bill O'Reilly looked like. Do I need to say more? Walking Satan. Tantoros alleged she had also been subjugated to unwelcome advances from Bill O'Reilly, whom she had regarded as a friend and an advisor. The suit charges that Bill O'Reilly asked her to come stay with him on Long Island, where it would be very private, and charges he told her on more than one occasion that he could see her as a wild girl, in that he believed she had a wild side. Tantoros lawyer Judge can't stand you, Bill Wright. Judge Bernstein told the New York Times that during an arbitration, Fox News offered to pay her a sum in the seven figures range if she renounced her claims against Roger Ailes and others at the network, including O'Reilly. Ailes did not act alone, the lawsuit states. He may have been the primary culprit, but his actions were domed by his most senior lieutenants, who engaged in a concerted effort to silence Tantoros by threats, humiliation, and retaliation. Tantoros is seeking $49 million in punitive damages for lost income, mental anguish, and attorney fees. Well, you go, girl. You go. Get everything you possibly can. Mm-hmm. I'm in your corner rooting for you. Okay, let's see what's happening on News of the Weird. We haven't talked about that in a while. Okay, these are your leading economic indicators. Don't fall out laughing now. Shrewd tourism campaigns. Check this out, y'all. Since Bulgaria on Romania's southern border lies close to Romania's iconic Transylvania region, hear me now, Bulgarian tourism officials have begun marketing their own vampire tourism industry. Stepped up following a 2014 archaeological find of a 4th century graveyard of adolescents with iron stakes through their chests. Y'all ought to quit it. The new tourism minister of Thailand is threatening to close down the lucrative sex business in Bangkok and Pattaya even when the country is still rallying from a 2014 near recession. Ms. Cobcorn insisted that visitors are not interested in such a thing as sex, but come to Thailand's beautiful culture. Yeah, girlfriend. This was just in July 22nd when she made that statement. You hold on to that. I bet you make more money on sex than you do in your beautiful culture. Okay, also under the heading of leading economic indicators, pay to go away. Sports Illustrated noted in May that some universities are still paying out millions of dollars to failed coaches who had managed to secure big contracts in more optimistic times. Notre Dame's largest athletic payout in 2014 was $2.5 million to ex-football coach Charles Wise, 5 years after he had been fired. Hello, somebody. That ended Wise's Notre Dame contract, which paid him $15 million post-dismissal. But he is still drawing several million dollars from the University of Kansas, despite having been let go there also. Must be good, huh? Big money. The continuing crisis, horniness. A year-long nationwide investigation by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which reported this in May, a couple of months ago, found more than 2,400 doctors penalized for sexually abusing their patients, with state medical boards ultimately allowing more than half to continue practicing medicine. Let me read that again. A year-long nationwide investigation by the Atlantic Journal-Constitution found more than 2,400 doctors penalized for sexually abusing their patients, with state medical boards ultimately allowing more than half to continue practicing medicine. Some doctors, it reported noted, are among the most prolific sex offenders in the country. Damn, with hundreds of victims. No comment. Number two under continuing crisis, District Judge Joseph Beckman in Arkansas Rural Cross County resigned in May after the State Judicial Discipline Committee found as many as 4,500 nude or semi-nude photos of young men who had been before Boatman's court. Some were naked, being paddled by Boatman, who trolled for victims by writing young men notes offering a community service option. This was also reported, y'all, in July 6th of this year, and in fact on ABC News. Well, for good measure, first one, Rice Holman pleaded guilty to a firearms charge in Melbourne, Australia, in July for shooting 53 bullets into his brother's Xbox. The brother had urinated on Holman's car. Number two, Mauricio Morales, 24, was sentenced to life in prison by a Montgomery County, Maryland judge in July following his April conviction for fatally stabbing a friend 89 times. Damn, was you pissed, bubby? Boo, you sound like you was a little upset 89 times. Jeez. Once or twice would have done the deal. You know what I mean? You need to take a class. Anyway, boldface names and news of the weird. First story. Police in Southampton, New York confirmed a July altercation in which model Christy Brinkley water hosed a woman she had spotted urinating on her beachfront property. Erica Rimkus, 36, said her need was urgent after watching the July 4th fireworks show, but Brinkley shouted, "How dare you! And I walk on these rocks." Where Remus had relieved herself, so Christy put the water hose on her. Number two story. Also in July, actor Brooke Shields made the news when she, as curator of an art show in Southampton, New York, managed to rescue a piece that custodians had inadvertently tossed into the garbage. The cleanup crew had made an understandable mistake, as the statue was a raccoon, y'all, standing next to a trash can. Really? Ready to rummage? The Redneck Chronicles. First story. Knoxville, Tennessee. Firefighters were called to a home in July when a woman tried to barbecue brisket in her bathroom and, in addition to losing control of the flame, melted her fiberglass bathtub. Firefighters limited the damage by turning on the shower. SOS, stuck on stupid. Number two story. One day earlier in Union, South Carolina, a 33-year-old woman called police to her home, claiming that she had fallen asleep on her couch with her upper plate in her mouth, but that when she awoke, it was gone, and that she suspect a teeth-napping intruder. That heifer was high. I don't care what y'all say. She was on meth or something. How to tell if you're drunk. The owner of the How at the Moon Bar in Gold Coast, Australia, released surveillance video of a July break-in, later inspiring the perpetrator to turn himself in. The man is seen trying to enter the locked bar at 3 a.m. in the morning and then tossing a beer keg at a glass door three times, finally creating a hole large enough to climb through acrobatically and fall into the floor, lit cigarette remaining firmly between his lips. Okay? Once inside, he stood at the bar, apparently waiting for someone to take his order. When no one came, he meekly left through the same door. The owner said nothing was taken and nothing else was damaged. Another S.O.S. Stuck on stupid. Reoccurring things. Too many toilet-themed restaurants. The first one in Taiwan made news of the weird in 2006, but recently two more opened their doors, one in Semarang, Indonesia, on Java Island, serves only one dish, brown meatballs floating in thick soup, array in a toilet-shaped pan. The owner's secondary agenda is to inspire people to install toilets in their home. In Toronto's Korean town, a dessert theme, one was scheduled to open in August with patrons seating on you-know-what and a variety of brown sweets such as swirly stool-shaped chocolate ice cream. Potty-themed restaurants have opened in Russia, South Korea, the Philippines, China, Japan, and even Los Angeles, y'all. That is so disgusting. Okay, and this is a classic. In August 2012, a Michigan government watchdog group learned in a Freedom of Information Act request that the Detroit Water and Sewage Department still has one job on the payroll as a horse shoer. The department owns no horses. Over the years, the position has become a patronage slot, playing about $57,000 a year in salary and benefits, and sometimes a horseshoer has been asked to do blacksmith work such as metal repair. The city employs unions fight to retain every job no matter what its title, and that's why Detroit is in the shape it is in today. Okay, y'all, we're going to take a quick break. Oh, my God, it's just too funny. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right on back. Don't you go nowhere. You're listening to In the Studio with Linus on the Essence of Success Radio Network. Well, welcome back, everybody. You're listening to In the Studio with Linus here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. That phone number is area code 646-727-2914, and the chat room is open. Everybody is welcome, whether you're in the chat room or on the phone just listening. Well, now, I was going to talk about Hillary's health. Hillary's doing okay. They're trying to say she's sick. But you know what? Something breaking news right now. I'm going to talk a little bit about the many Clinton foundations, okay? More than half the people outside the government who met with Hillary Clinton while she was Secretary of State gave money, either personally or through the companies or groups, to the Clinton Foundation. It's an extraordinary proportion, y'all, indicating her possible ethics challenges if elected president. At least 85 of the 154 people from private interests who met or had phone conversation scheduled with Clinton while she led the State Department donated to her family charity or pledge commitment to its international programs. According to a review of the State Department calendars released so far to the API, combined, the 85 donors contributed as much as $156 million. At least 40 donated more than $100,000 each, and 20 gave more than $1 million each. Gone with it, Hillary and Bill. Donors who were granted time with Clinton included an international known economist who asked for her help as the Bangladesh government pressured him to resign from a nonprofit bank he ran, a Wall Street executive who saw Clinton's help with a visa problem, and Estee Lauder executives who were listed as meeting with Clinton while her department worked with the firm's corporate charity to counter gender-based violence in South Africa. The meetings between the Democratic presidential nominee and foundation donors do not appear to violate legal agreements Clinton and former President Bill Clinton signed before she joined the State Department in 2009, but the frequency of the overlap shows the intermingling of excess and donations and fuels perceptions that giving the foundation money was a price of admission for FaceTime with Clinton. Her calendars and emails released as recently as this week describe scores of contacts she and her top aides had with foundation donors. The 154 did not include U.S. federal employees or foreign government representatives. Clinton met with representatives from at least 16 foreign governments that donated as much as $170 million to the Clinton charity, but they were not included in AP's calculations because such meetings would presumably have been part of her diplomatic duties. It is outrageous to misrepresent Secretary Clinton's basis for meeting with these individuals, spokesman Brian Fallon said. He called it a distorted portrayal of how often she crossed paths with individuals connected to charitable donations to the Clinton Foundation. Last week, the Clinton Foundation moved to head off ethics concerns about future donations by announcing changes planned if Clinton is elected. On Monday, Bill Clinton said in a statement that if his wife were to win, he would step down from the foundation's board and stop all fundraising for it. The foundation would also accept donations only from United States citizens, and what it described as independent philanthropics will no longer be taking gifts from foreign groups, U.S. companies, or corporate charities. Clinton said the foundation would no longer hold annual meetings of its international aid program, the Clinton Global Initiative, and it would spin off its foreign-based programs to other charities. Those plan changes would not affect more than 6,000 donors who have already provided the Clinton charity with more than $2 billion in funding since its creation in 2000. There's a lot of potential conflicts, y'all, and a lot of potential problems. An expert on nonprofits who previously directed Columbia University graduating fundraising management program, Douglas White, said the point is she can just walk away from these 6,000 donors. Former senior White House ethics official said a Clinton administration would have to take careful steps to ensure that past foundation donors would not have the same access as she allowed at the State Department. If Secretary Clinton puts the right people in and she's tough about it and has the right procedures in place and sends a message consistent with a strong commitment to ethics, it can be done. Clinton should retain the Obama administration's current ethics commitments and oversight, which includes lobbying restrictions and other rules. Richard Painter, a former ethics advisor to President George W. Bush and currently a University of Minnesota law professor, said Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton should remove themselves completely from foundation leadership roles. But he added that potential conflicts would shadow any policy decision affecting past donors. Some of Clinton's most influential visitors donated millions to the Clinton Foundation and to her and her husband's political coffers. They are among scores of Clinton's visitors and phone contacts in her official calendar turned over by the State Department last year and in more detailed planning schedules that so far have covered about half her four-year tenure. AP saw Clinton's calendar and schedules 3 years ago, but delays led the AP to sue the State Department last year in federal court for those materials and other records. Bill Clinton Foundation donors with no history of political giving to the Clintons also met or talked by phone with Hillary Clinton and top aides. Okay. Well, that's all that I have because I want to get to sports. You know, I'll be on the NFL this weekend. Yup. Y'all know that's right. So, what I'm going to talk about on the sports section is the AFC winners and losers, and then I'm going to do the NFC winners and losers from last week. This is week two. And don't forget to, on Saturday, I believe, well, we don't hear it on the West Coast. On the East Coast, it begins at 8 o'clock. It's the NFL show. Shout out. And tailgate starts at 7 on the East. At 8, I mean. And then at 10 o'clock is the NFL show from 10 to 12. That's when you'll hear me. But I'll be on at 8 o'clock. So anyway, be more about it. Check on my website, theessenceofsuccess.com, and I'll have all the information posted so you'll be able to listen to the show. Okay? All right, now, week two, AFC winners and losers. Well, Baltimore Ravens, your winner was John Herbert. He has the depth to go as a run heavy as he wants this year. Running backs, Taron West and Kenneth Dixon, they finished out the game against the Colts, yet looked too dynamic to sit too far long behind Justin Forsett and Buck Allen, okay? The losers on Baltimore was Ryan Mallett. He might be losing another job. After a shaky offseason, journeyman Josh Johnson is now in the mix to back up starting quarterback. Joe Flacco, meanwhile, and Dennis Pita's broken finger has proven to be a bigger issue this month than his surgically repaired hip. Ben Watson and Crockett Gilmore are ahead of him in the depth chart at tight end, and Pita is running out of time. Hello, somebody. Now, in the Buffalo Bills, the winners, Rex Ryan, bad luck summer, including losing his top two drafts to injury, but at least his third-round pick, Adolphus Washington, defensive line, y'all. He's flashed in both preseason games. Adolphus looks pretty good. And the sixth-rounder, Kevin Seymour, hello. He's earned his snaps, too, perhaps in the deepest cornerback. So go ahead on with that, Kevin. Now, losers on Buffalo. Running game, Buffalo, you got to pick up your running game. It don't look too good, even with the release of Carlos Williams and the out of work a few weeks ago, Reggie Bush. So, hey, he's now headed for a big role as a backup running back and return man. Okay, now let's see what's happening on the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, winners, you got rookie receiver Tyler Boyd. He's had 3 plays over 20 yards in 2 games. Y'all know that's my cousin. If you count his 24-yard punt return when he played Detroit, it would not be a surprise if he wound up having more value to the Bengals this year than veteran Brandon LaFell. Hello? The losers with a roster that's largely stable. Cincinnati was the most difficult AFC team on which to find a loser. The biggest concern for the Bengals has been injuries. And this last week, they've lost their first two picks from last year's draft, right tackle Cedric and swing tackle Jake Fisher. So think about that, y'all. Okay, Cleveland Browns, we got RG3's performance against Atlanta was a reminder that he throws a pretty deep ball when protected. His accuracy stood out almost as much as his athleticism during his rookie year. On the other side of the ball, cornerback Jamar Taylor was acquired as an afterthought in a draft day trade. Now he could be starting in week one. Hello. The losers on Cleveland. It's time to see the second-year nose tackle, Danny Shelton. He drafted 12th overall in 2015, playing with Mingo. He was drafted 6th in 2013 against the deep reserves late in last Thursday's game versus the Falcons, you know, the Atlanta Falcons, okay? Mingo looks unlikely to make the team. Cleveland is still waiting for Shelton to make an impact. Another first-round pick, cornerback Justin Gilbert, drafted 8th overall in 2014, remains in the mix for more playing time, but hey, he's missed a lot of tackles in preseason, y'all, okay? All right, Denver goes winners. Virgil Green has taken hold of the Broncos' starting tight end job with a big camp, punctuated by a great game against San Francisco 49ers. He made the 49ers safety Antoine look like he was in slow motion on one day. With a shaky quarterback situation and no one truly stepping up for the number three receiver role, Green could be a popular target this season. Excuse me. Yeah, Denver. I wonder who you guys are going to get for a quarterback. Because Brady ain't there, I don't think. Losers, Trevor Siemian was one of two don't-blow-it drives from security Denver's week one starting quarterback job after his pick six against San Francisco. The news that he's starting the third week of the preseason means he's still the favorite, and it's most likely because of erratic plays from Mark Sanchez, who appears to know what an opportunity he's let slip away this month. Sanchez had an 8-play stretch that included 2 fumbles and 2 near interceptions. I know y'all saw that. The discouraging part for Coach Gary Kubiak is that neither player responded well after the mistakes. Paxton Lynch has made more big-time throws than either player in front of him, but he still holds the ball too long, like nearly any rookie quarterback. One troubling theme that the three quarterbacks had in common was a lack of pass protection. This offensive line is full of question marks. Houston Texans, the winner is Javion Clowney, made a huge impact in each of his first 5 snaps back on the field against New Orleans. He beat double teams and overwhelmed opponents with his power. Y'all better watch Clowney. That faded as the game wore on, but Clowney is set up for a monster season. Now, if he can stay healthy, y'all watch out. Houston might be in the final, I'll say the final 4. Better watch out. Clowney might make a A. Don't assume, okay? You know about assuming. Anyway, Javion Clowney, I wish you the best. Indianapolis Colts. Winners are Andrew Luck didn't do anything fancy in his first 2 preseason drives, but he was notably under control. The quarterback's arm looked all the way back after his injury ravaged in 2015, and he made Ravens linebacker C.J. Mosley look bad on one run. It helps the receiver Philip Dorsett is maturing and showing an ability to run more of the route tree. Now, the losers on the Indianapolis is Luck will have to carry this team. Cornerback Vontae Davis' ankle injury is a reminder that this could be the most talent-poor defense in football. Talent-poor defense in football, especially when Davis is off the field. All right, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Winner, few teams have enjoyed a better month despite the Jags' 0-2 preseason record. Defensive tackle Derek Marks and first-round pick Jalen showed explosiveness in preseason week two. If Marcus all the way back to his 2014 from his defense could flip from Steve to scary in one season. Few teams could have talents like Marks or rookie linebacker Miles Jack as part-time players on offense. Things are going as planned with T.J. Yeldon and Ivory in the backfield with a near-equal split of snaps. Ivory is full run out like a madman while I can. Preseason mode. Now, the losers on the Jaguar, offensive line remains the team's biggest concern. Okay, y'all got to work on that, especially because free agent Kevin Beecham still isn't ready to play. Former first-round pick Luke Josey continues to hold down the left tackle spot for now, but he can't do it by himself. All right, okay, Jackson. Kansas City Chiefs winners. The Chiefs' wideout problems of yesteryear are a distant memory. Jeremy Maclin established himself as a worthy number one receiver last season, and second-year man Chris Conley is developing into a legitimate starter. Conley's speed jumps off the page. He beats the Rams' number one quarterback, Jermaine Johnson, over the weekend on the way to 66 yards on three grabs. All right. Now, the losers on the Chiefs are still looking for that right combination in their secondary. Day three selections, Eric Murray, fourth-round safety, and DJ White, sixth-round cornerback. Both started against the Rams, yet struggled to prevent big plays. Miami Dolphins, the winners. Receiver Kenny Stills and quarterback Ryan Tannehill, were the highlights on the otherwise rough weekend for Miami. Stills had two scores and a 55-yard grab that came on a Tannehill rollout. Hopefully, Coach Adam Gase uses Tannehill's ability to throw on the move to both sides better than the previous coaching staff in Miami. Losers, despite that perhaps no team had a more trying pair of days in Miami. Center Mike Pouncey has another hip injury, and the Dolphins don't have an experienced center to replace him in the lineup. Tight end Jordan's end zone drop comes after growing pains throughout the camp. Furthermore, Kiko Alonso and the linebackers reminded Dolphins that the secondary isn't the only shaky-looking defense unit. The Dolphins want rookie Xavier Howard to be their starting cornerback, but he's just returned to the field after surgery and will take time to get back into the flow. It's a very thin position, especially when Byron Maxwell is giving up big plays. Finally, we'd love to see more carries from Arian Foster in the preseason. He looked a little sluggish in limited work against Dallas, but two carries is too small a sample size to work about now for now. So, you know, give the brother a chance. New England Patriots, winners. LeGarrette Blount is Bill Belichick's new Antoine Smith. The Patriots want to do better at running back, but they can't find anyone to unseat Blount. His excellent performance against Chicago should cement his job as a primary running down back. Elsewhere, it's been a preseason full of surprising performances by young Patriots with defensive end Trey Flowers and defensive tackle Anthony Johnson and tight end A.J. Derby, all forcing Belichick to play them. Losers, the injuries to right tackle Sebastian Vollmer and running back Deion Lewis are devastating because the Patriots have such a drop-off after both at their positions. Right tackle Marcus Cannon struggled badly over the last two seasons. Lewis will be replaced by James White, who has not fit well with New England's legacy of nifty third down backs. Okay, New York. Oh, my time. I still haven't even got to the other ones. Okay, tell you what, take a quick break when we come back. When we come back, then I'll do the NFC. So don't go nowhere. Stay right there. See, now I know you're paying attention.
a bionic, it's ironic. Slamming niggas like tonics. Lunatics to the day I died. I run more game than the pony pilot. I'm going down, down, baby.
Of Success Radio Network. The time right now is 6:46 on the West Coast, and it's 9:46 on the East Coast. Anyway, the phone number is area code 646-727-2914. So I was doing the AFC winners and losers, and because time is catching up with me, I'm sorry I didn't complete it, but I want to get to the NFC because, you know, I got to do my team, Seattle Seahawks, and plus Tampa Bay, Washington Redskins, Dallas Cowboys, because, you know, I got to represent for my friends up here. So Seattle Seahawks, your winners are Coach Pete Carroll continues to indicate running back Thomas Rawls is on pace to play week one against Miami, with Christine Michael showing off his turbo button each week. It's hard to imagine Rawls getting workhorse carries early in the season after some spotty draft classes lately. The Seahawks are on track to have week one starters to guard Jermaine Ifedi and defensive tackle Jaron Rewa. We just lost. So by 6 points. Anyway, losers, we're going to list Seahawks fans as losers because of the lack of reporting allowing at their practices this time of year. Excellent papers like the Seattle Times have to resort to gleaning takeaway from a photo gallery on the team's website for information. Here's a common sense deduction. The Seahawks, excellent cornerback depth behind Richard Sherman, Deshaun Shedd, Tyrell Simon and Jeremy Lane means that Brandon Bauer is not locked to make the roster. Ooh. Okay. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, your winners are Austin Seferin. Jink is a winner this week. Despite playing with backups on Saturday, he made a few chunk plays for Mike Glennon, reminding his coaching staff that he's still the most explosive tight end on the roster. Jenkins is splitting first-team snaps with Cameron Brate once again. Losers. The Bucks rookie kicker Roberto has already missed 3 short kicks in 2 games. In response, he's already spoken to former NFL kicker Ryan Longwell, former Bucks special teams coordinator Billy Miller, and a mental coach to deal with the problems. According to Ray Cummings of WDAE Tampa, this does not inspire confidence. It sure doesn't. Don't you have another kicker beside him? He can't be your only kicker, Tampa Bay. Okay, Washington Redskins. Winners, Vernon Davis is on track to make the Redskins and possibly have a decent role in the offense. Hello. Considering the recent trajectory of the tight end's career, that was far from a given. Losers, Matt Jones has the skills to be number one back, but faces questions about his fumbling problems and durability. Both showed up Friday night against the Jets. Jones should be ready for week one for now. Rob Kelly and Keith Marshall will battle for early down work. Kelly is in front. Don't be surprised if general manager Scott McClohan adds a veteran eventually. Okay, now let's go back up, see what the Dallas Cowboys. That's my daughter's team. She's a diehard for Dallas Cowboys. Dallas Cowboys winner. While the pass rush remains an open question, a lot of other Cowboys questions have been answered this month. Running back Alfred Morris, excellent play, has earned him a big role and could make Darren McFadden expendable. Cornerback Morris Claiborne is entering his fifth season with more positive momentum than ever before. And rookie quarterback Dak Prescott has given the Cowboys a young quarterback of the future to groom, even if it wasn't their first choice. Losers, it's hard to find a loser in Dallas during the game. Game week, the team moved into its fancy new practice facilities despite the return to health of key players and other possibilities. We are no closer to knowing who will start at defensive end, but the best current guess is Ryan Russell, David Irving, who has been hurt. This is an issue without a Dak-like magic solution. Well, and the Green Bay Packers? Okay, winners after an offseason of conjecture, Devontae Adams is settling into the Packers' number three receiver role, finally. Two nice grabs against Oakland helped his case. On defense, the Packers' young secondary trio of high picks, Ha-Ha Clinton, Demarius Randall, and Quentin Rollins is playing well. All under age 25, these guys have a chance to grow up together. Losers, it has been a bummer to see backup quarterback Brett Huntley struggle with injury so much after lighting up the preseason last year. He missed valuable development time. And the Los Angeles Rams winners, veteran quarterback Case Keenum has helped make rookie Jarrett struggles easier to swallow by leading the Rams to three touchdowns in his four preseason drives. The Rams running game from the offense line to backups Benny Cunningham and Malcolm Brown has also shown well. Former number two overall pick Greg Robinson is mauling opponents. You go, Greg. The losers, Geoff, has shown why he was drafted number one for spurts of each preseason game. Spurts for each preseason game, but the mistakes on handoffs, delay of games, and excessive holding of the football shows he's not ready to start yet. With Farrell Cooper all but locking down the number three receiver job, it's worth wondering if Brian Quick will make the team. Okay, Minnesota Vikings winners. Injuries to cornerbacks Terrence Newman and Xavier Rhodes have given 2015 first-round pick Trey Wan snaps as a starter in practice and in preseason. This is his chance to push for more playing time because he could still be stuck as a number four quarterback. Now the losers is your first-round receiver on Minnesota. Treadwell's inability to separate was hard to miss in Minnesota's second preseason game. It's wild that Adam Thielen is a better bet for early season snaps than Treadwell. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's talk about the Carolina Panthers. Winners. The Panthers have potential breakout players at every level of the defense. In Coney Ealy, linebacker Shaq Thompson, and safety Trey Boston. We love watching Boston fly around the football. The Panthers' secret sauce remains the ability to coach up defensive backs. Losers, well, receiver Kelvin Benjamin played 8 snaps in his return to preseason action as the Panthers played it safe with his conditioning. It is not a mistake that Coach Ron Rivera publicly set the bar low for Benjamin's week. One snap count as 30 to 35. As Packers coach Mike McCarthy said this about running back Eddie Lacy, hot takesmen around the country would be weighing in. The story is strangely under the radar outside of Carolina. Chicago Bears, Jeremy Langford has a lot to prove as a primary running back, but he is clearly getting the majority of work with the Bears' first-team offense. That's the good news. The bad news is that he has a sore foot and was one of 20 Bears to miss practice on Sunday. Damn. Losers, it's early, but receiver and second-year pro Kelvin White hasn't shown much in the preseason yet. That comes on the heels of a quiet training. Well, the Arizona Cardinals winners, the return to practice for receiver John Brown after missing 3 weeks for a concussion is a big relief. First-round pick Robert, his ankle is also expected to make his preseason debut on the defensive line this week. Safety Tyrann Mathieu won't play in a game just yet, but his return to practice is a huge boost. Now, the losers on Arizona Cardinals, there's no need to be concerned about the Cardinals' offensive preseason woes. Their roster is loaded with players who have proven what they can do. With that said, quarterback Carson Palmer and coach Bruce Arians both sound motivated to produce numbers this week before questions mount. So it looks like in the NFC, we're going to look at Arizona Cardinals, the Panthers, and the Cowboys. Huh? Panthers, I got to remember that when I look at the schedule this week for the games. Okay, well, we've come to the end of the show. I just want to thank everybody from around the world, in the chat room, or even on the phone for joining me today on In the Studio with Linus on the Essence of Success Radio Network. Now, don't forget to turn in tomorrow at 6 p.m., okay, at 6 p.m., for psychic readings, free psychic readings with me and Nina tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Okay, now have a good rest of the week. And if nobody's told you they love you this week, I do.